This is the July 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Logan Kimmel joins us from RoachAgMarketing.com out of Naperville, Illinois. And John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities. That's RMCommodities.com online from Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of items that we ought to talk about for the day. Matt Bennett, of course, we had the USDA WASDE report this week. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things that jump out to me. Obviously, the macro situation, I think, needs to be discussed, from the strength of the dollar to the way that this crude oil market has kind of fell out of bed over the last several days. And then just wanting to get everyone's idea about this weather. I mean, obviously, we've got a forecast for the next couple, 3 weeks, potentially pretty dry in the Western Corn Belt, especially. And just, you know, I just want to hear the other guys' opinions on who's going to win out, the macro situation, the weather situation, or a combination of both.
Logan Kimmel, anything to add to the list?
Yeah, good points. I think this week is a very good example of the extreme volatility in the grains, but also the outside markets, with beans in about a 45-cent range today, wheat almost 40. And yes, it is becoming a battle between the financial market weakness and then Mother Nature and these droughts that are building across the EU and the spine of the central U.S. And I think we might have seen a little bit of a breakaway on the fundamental side on corn today, closing positive because of these worries coming up in the 6 to 10 day. But definitely a massive moves in markets we've seen this week and in the past 3 weeks, really.
John Zanker, anything we didn't cover that we should add to this list?
Well, I think Matt and Logan covered it well, and I'm assuming I'm the old guy of the group, so this is my 41st year of messing with this stuff, and probably out of the 41 years, at least 21 times I said this year's more confusing than any other I've seen. This one's right up there, and for the reasons that the guys mentioned, we've got the dollar, we have inflation, we have the war, and now we have a weather forecast that changes every day. It's just not a weekend thing. It's just about every day. And yet the extended maps continue to show hot and dry. And I think there's just a lot of concern with the bulls, certainly, that that's going to flip when they go home, go to bed, go to sleep. It's going to look different in the morning, or when they go home on Friday, it's going to look different on Sunday night. And we've just seen a lot of that. So it's a mess. You know, it really is a mess. This is, I'm going to add it to the list of those years that I thought were really, really difficult to market.
Let's begin with the weather, and I'll start, Matt Bennett, with you. I flew over Mattoon today on my way back from Florida. I've been out sailing for the week with a college friend. It was great fun. However, we were low enough by the time we arrived in Bloomington that we flew across Mattoon and over the Clinton area on our way into Bloomington. And I have to tell you that there are no holes in the crop from above, and it looks fantastic. I'm wondering whether from the roadside it looks different than that.
Not really, Todd. To be honest with you, this spring, of course, we got a little bit of a late start. But at the same time, it was a good start. We didn't have flooding after that. You know, Central Illinois, I think, was pretty blessed, quite frankly. We actually got started around the 21st and 22nd of April. You know, and typically what will happen for us in that part of the world is that you finally get dry enough to go. And, you know, if it gets super late, you'll push it just a little bit, just like everyone. But we really didn't have to this year. But a lot of times, whenever you get those ideal conditions, you turn around, and even if you get the crop up and growing, you always get that one, what I would call pond filler, where you get a 3-4 inch rain. Folks have to go back out and spot in. This is the first year I can remember, you know, in quite some time that we don't have those ponds replanted. Everything looks good. And yes, from the air, it looks phenomenal. So there's no doubt we've gone through some dry spells, but fortunately, especially whenever you get into my part of the world, this last week, we had very abundant rainfall. I know whenever you get closer to Champaign, there wasn't as much. But we've had enough rainfall that I think that there's some areas where you had those 3-4 and 5 inch rains that you didn't end up with ponds last week. Obviously, we were dry, but they couldn't have come at a better time. So, yes, the crop looks fantastic in our part of the world. I do think there's some problem areas, but it's going to be a feast or famine situation this year where those that have a pretty darn good looking crop, I think, could set some records. And unfortunately, there'll be some folks that are going to be towards the lower end of some of their crops over the last 10 years.
Here in Champaign County, Logan Kimmel, we were the bullseye or thereabouts of the driest area in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. You suggest that there is, quote, a spine of drought across the U.S. that is developing or might. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what your thoughts are?
Yeah, I do think, as Matt mentioned, that parts of most of Illinois and Iowa do look good, with the exception of the Champaign, maybe the Decatur area. But the real issue, I think, to watch is into western Iowa, into Nebraska, and kind of up the Dakotas. That strip, they're looking like more heat coming in the 6 to 10 day, a little bit below precipitation expectations. Where they did get in a little bit later there and have had some issues. I think that's probably more the problem area right now. Still have a long ways to go, but I've heard good reports out of the ice states so far. I think it's just more the western part that is at risk right now and looks like it will be going forward here for the next 2 weeks.
John Zenker, anything to add to this part of the conversation as it relates to dry conditions or poor weather conditions in the Corn Belt based on conversations potentially that you've had with clientele?
Well, I live on the south side of Lafayette, and I think Champaign has certainly been a dry area. I'm pretty sure we're the driest area. Unfortunately, I'm going to take claim to that one. We're ground zero, this thing here on the south side of Lafayette. And, you know, you can go south not too far and you start to see things improve to the north, north central, very dry. Then you go into the northeast Indiana and Logansport or in the Fort Wayne area, and they had 5 inches of rain last week. So, you know, and as a marketing advisor, we have to be careful, of course, and farmers not to look out our back door and make marketing decisions. And if we did that here, we'd be really bullish because our light ground is toast. I mean, it's toast. And fortunately, we have more of the good stuff than the bad stuff. And the good stuff looks better than it should. But at my house, I haven't had a half inch of rain in any one rain since the middle of May, maybe late May. So we have a mess. But in general, I would agree with what the other two gentlemen were saying. We have customers in western Iowa. Their crop looks pretty good right now. But boy, if you look at the Omaha two-week forecast, it's nothing but mid to high 90s for the most part for the next 2 weeks. Des Moines a little better than that temperature-wise, but we're going to have some stress on a very, very good-looking crop. And if we don't get rain here on Sunday, Monday, and that's currently what the forecast is again, if we don't get that here, we're looking at probably at least 25% crop losses in our area, and that area is not insignificant.
I want to return to the fundamentals of the crop in the United States, the weather market, in just a bit, but turn our attention at this point to some of the outside markets that we've talked about, the extreme volatility, the financial markets, the macro situation, the strength in the dollar, and the losses in crude oil and what that might mean. Let's start with that loss in crude oil, Matt Bennett. Can you outline what's happened in the last couple of weeks and what impact that may be having on this year's price for the new crop and next year's price for fertilizer?
Well, you know, when you look, for instance, at August crude oil here, you know, you go back to the start of June and we were trading a shade over 120, you know, and then you get towards the middle in June, you know, and you're pushing down towards $100. And then, of course, now we're trading down to 96.50. And so certainly we've seen a kind of what I would say, talk of deflationary type movements, you know, which is very interesting considering CPI came out yesterday at 9.1, and that's by all means not a deflationary situation. But, you know, if you start looking at crude oil, you start looking at, for instance, natural gas, obviously nat gas went from, you know, talks of $10 and we weren't too far away, you know, and then we went back down into the 550 range. And right now we're currently trading above 650. But you get natural gas to take a little bit of pressure off, and it certainly gives you pause to think that maybe you're going to get some relief whenever it comes to fertilizer. But I think we all know and should all be able to admit that fertilizer is not going to give us a whole lot of relief if the price of corn does not go lower. And so, you know, there's definitely a strong correlation there. I think whenever I look to see what's going to happen this fall, if I want to start to project there a little bit, I got to be really cautious as to lock in one side of either December 23 corn or my fertilizer once you start getting prices. And they are floating some of those prices out there right now. I'm hearing a lot of 13 to 1350 anhydrous, and 1350 anhydrous with, you know, with these 23 corn at 568 is probably not going to look on a profitability analysis near like a person wants to see if they were able to book their anhydrous last year, you know, on a prepay level. You know, I know a lot of folks that booked their anhydrous early last year that didn't book their corn, and they certainly are able to lock in some incredible profit margins. So I think fertilizer on the dry side, you're going to get relief from what we saw at the peaks. But whenever I start looking at anhydrous, I think that it's going to be a much more fluid situation. And quite frankly, I've got to be really, really careful once again as to lock in one side of the equation without locking in the other.
And then Logan Kimmel, take up the financial markets, potentially the dollar in this process, what it means for export markets, and some of the moves that have happened in the last 2 weeks, particularly as it relates to beans with China and Brazil.
Yeah, that's definitely been on the U.S. dollar side a headwind here recently, poking up to really 20-year highs. And that's caused the sell-off or decline in some other currencies, the real and the euro. So making our exports look less attractive with that move, that has been troublesome for the futures prices moving higher here. And I think we saw that today with some cancellations on old crop beans. And really low export sales. I mean, seasonally, we kind of expect to see that, but that's just been an issue here. And the chart on that dollar has just been up, up, up. So I don't know how sustainable that is long term. I think there'll be a correction, but that's absolutely been a weigh on our exports and our futures prices here that we've seen in the last really month and a half.
And John, I suppose that it's the dollar, inflation talk, recession talk, the outside markets, Brazil, the exports from China, the whole Ukraine-Russia thing that has caused so much of the issue as it's related to volatility and confusion among the market members. Is there a way you can cut through that to give us an idea of what this market might do for the next month or two?
Well, I think when you throw all that in and mix it all up and toss it out, the one thing that will really dictate the markets from this point through the first week of September is weather. You know, I mean, that's just typically what it is. Now, all of the things that you mentioned are things that we typically don't have to deal with on a singular basis. Now we have them all going on at the same time. When will the war end? Does the war end maybe surprisingly in a month? There was talk that Turkey, of course, had brokered a deal to start getting some Ukrainian exports out through Odessa. It's just daily we have things to deal with, but the weather forecast will be the dominant one. And, you know, we've talked about oil and, geez, if I had to make a living speculating in the crude oil market or the gold market, I'd be greeting at Walmart on the side. I mean, this thing is ridiculous. And when the Europeans got together and said, the European Union said, we're going to stop importing Russian crude as soon as we can, I thought at the very least we'd retest that March high of 130 in the crude. And I thought there was a pretty good chance we'd eventually see 150, especially if we were getting to the point where we were talking about 9.1% inflation and the war was still going on in the middle of July. And here we have gold at multi-month lows, crude oil's trying to get back to the point where it was the first day of the war. And that's just amazing to me. And when you see that stuff going on in those kind of markets, which used to be inflation hedges, gold, certainly crude. And now we're sitting here trying to figure out what's going to happen in the corn market when you have a war going on in one of the biggest export countries in the world. And you throw it all up and throw it all out. And I guess if you could tell me what the weather's going to do, I could give you a pretty good shot at what price is going to do. And I would expect maybe a continuation of this little bounce in here as long as this forecast holds and the updated 6-10, 8-14, still hot and dry. And especially for the Western Corn Belt where the crop looks really good at this point.
Prior to this point, on July the 1st, we were thinking about whether this year looked like 2008, which was a June high and then a low, or if it looked like 2012. I don't know at this point whether we can call it either one. It looks more like 2008 than 2012 at this time. There's a lot of weather yet to go, so it won't look like either of them. Which direction do you think we favor heading into the August? Let's just go through the August time frame to think about old crop. The producers I know still have in the bin for corn.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I'll try to answer it as best I can. I think, first of all, looking at, you know, what do we look more like as far as chart goes between 08 and 12, and it certainly looks more like 08. And so a person has to do me a favor and not look and see what the these corn chart look like going into expiration, because
not good.
Drive you into depression, because it definitely was not pretty. Okay, but that's what we look like right now. I mean, it almost mirrors that type of chart action. But at the same time, I think getting to your question, you know, every year's different. First of all, second of all, yes, there's a lot of folks that still got old corn sitting around. And so, you know, one thing that was interesting whenever we got the quarterly stocks is, you know, we felt like there was a few more stocks of both corn and beans, especially corn, than what maybe the market was indicating based upon basis and spreads. But of course, the USDA had mentioned that there was more on-farm stocks, which does make sense. If the producers got a little more money in their pocket, they've been a little more tight-fisted as far as those stocks are concerned. But we have to be a little cautious. Yes, the crop went in the ground late. I think there's a lot of folks that feel like corn won't be available until you get into, you know, maybe second, third week of September due to the fact that it went in late. But Todd, we've been building growing degree units like it's going out of style, and we continue to. And if the forecast holds correctly, the simple fact of the matter is this crop's going to come on a lot quicker than what a lot of folks thought that it might. And so we have to be really cautious when holding on to our old crop if we hold on to it too late in the game, because there's no question going from the July to the Sep, we lost some ground by all means as far as flat cash price was concerned. Moving forward, I would be really careful as to hold on to too much of my old corn. Gambling stocks make sense, but you know, I've talked to producers that have got significantly more than gambling stocks over the last several days, you know, that are really questioning their game plan. So I think a person has to be cautious, but by all means, make sure you let the people that you're dealing with know what you've got and what you want out of it. Because I've had a few folks tell me that they should have priced their corn higher because the first bid that they threw at the processor they took. So there's definitely origination issues out there, especially in certain regions. And a person needs to be well aware of what those issues are and how bad they want your corn.
John Zenker, I want to go back to earlier in the week with World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates reports. I was not watching them on Tuesday other than I saw the market action on that day. I don't know that the two were very related. Can you kind of recap what happened that day and why the market moved so sharply?
Well, I think it was more weather related than anything else. And I believe we had a pretty sharp drawdown in crude as well. So the outside markets kind of took over. We didn't have anything too startling showing up there. A little bit of a increase in the corn carryout due to lower exports. I think that was anticipated. The one surprise maybe, which, and again, it wasn't huge, was the trade. Myself, we were thinking that old crop carryout might get closer to 200 million, and yet they raised it up to 215 million. New crop came down to 230 million, and 231 million at a 51.5 yield. That's kind of tight. So I didn't see anything there that would have moved the market on its own. It's just we have so much stuff going on, and there wasn't anything there that really the bulls could chew into confidently. And with the things that were going on in the outside markets, it let the liquidation continue. And my fear is to the downside. I think from a 2008 perspective, of course, we had a financial meltdown. We may be heading into a light recession, but we're not going to have a financial meltdown this time. Our banks are in good shape. Unemployment's still close to record low. So we have a different environment financially than we did in 2008. But I also saw some interesting chart last week where, from 5, 10, 20-year perspective, once we get past that late June, July period, and the weather looks pretty good, you see a sharp sell-off, you see a rebound, and that rebound might last for a few days. It might last a couple, 3 weeks, and then you resume the downtrend. So I think everything that we see right now, if this weather forecast changes and you start pulling that heat out of the Western Belt, you get some rain in, we get some better action here precipitation-wise in the Eastern Corn Belt, we're heading to new lows. And those lows may be lower than what we all thought they might be, given some of the stuff that's going on in the outside markets.
Logan Kimmel, what was your opinion of the WASD numbers? I know July comes and goes fairly quickly, and we'll be looking to the August crop production figures more than anything else in the next few weeks.
Yeah, on the surface, not a lot of huge changes. I think, like what was said before, probably was more so trading weather and macros, considering going into the report, I think, down 25 on corn and 30 on beans before the numbers even came out. And once they did, you definitely got your volatility swings, but ended up closing sharply lower off that. So the selling started before the numbers came out, and there weren't huge adjustments. Overall, though, it's still very tight numbers. There's not much margin for error if the weather threatens this year's yields. So we still got to get the crop in the bin. I think reports are going to be also going forward, but I think in the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to be the weather and the forecast. And then how does that long-term affect our balance sheets? But as we saw, on report day and even today, it does not take much volume to move these forward trade futures either higher or lower. So market volatility, it's causing these funds to push these prices in extreme ways. And that's what we've seen here recently.
So is your opinion that the weather market will drive the markets higher short term? And what happens long term? And I know it has a lot to do with what the crop really looks like, but based on a normal growing condition the rest of the way out.
Yeah, it does. And clearly, if we remain hot and dry, that should give us an opportunity to recover. And I think overall, what producers need to do is look at what their production looks like. And if we can get a move and a rally, take a look at your break evens. And there's definitely ways to maintain ownership. But if you're one that might have too much on hand, it's probably not a wise move to keep a ton of inventory into the harvest in the winter in case, this weather plays out. We could see new lows, and we could see very low prices compared to what we think is low right now. So risk management, understanding the volatility, I think another good point was brought up is on the 2023. I do think one, either the futures or the input costs have to give way. Just be cautious locking in one or the other at 570 December futures with high energy or input costs. I think that's something to keep a sharp eye on and use improvements in futures prices to lock in and manage your risk at levels that make sense on P&L.
Matt, you were hesitant to give the number of on December corn in 2008. I will post a chart that we talked about earlier that I produced on the first day of July back into the WILL website at willag.org. This shows both the 2008 and 2012 corn prices. It's just a long-term corn number. That December corn price fell from $8 corn in June to $3 corn by the time we got to December, by the way, of 2008. No suggestion that that's what's going to happen this year, because I want to know, Matt, based on the WASDE figures this week, USDA is saying given a normal size crop, which would be a big one at 177 bushels to the acre, they still have a fairly large season's average price, not certainly $8 corn, but in the upper $6 range. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing you got to remember is that the 1.5 kind of crept in there, you know, as far as the carryout, just got above it. But what you have to remember is that stocks to use ratio is still right around 10%. 10% stocks to use on corn, especially whenever we're looking at, you know, the kind of usage that we look at these days, is typically when you get below a 12% stocks to use ratio, most would call for some sort of a demand rationing rally. Now, obviously, we've already had a very strong rally, so, you know, it's tough to ask for any rally on top of that. But I guess from my personal vantage point, you've got to ask yourself, you know, what people are frustrated, you know, whenever you see the markets just completely fall out of bed, like we've seen recently. But you look historically at what prices are, and you got to be very cautious as to assume that, you know, that prices that are historically looking really good are just simply going to rally due to the fact that you've got a tight stocks to use ratio. So my personal opinion, you know, just like Logan was just saying, reiterating what I talked about earlier, you got to be really careful when you're looking at that new crop situation, you know, because there's a lot of moving parts there and it can bite you squarely, you know, where if you don't handle it correctly. Now, I think with the 22 crop, we've had all kinds of opportunities. We know that. But we're still looking at, in the grand scheme of things, you're $1.50 plus off the highs and you've still got $6 corn. So, I mean, that's still an incredible place to be, especially for most producers who are in a situation where they at least booked some of those inputs at a much cheaper rate than the high. And so I think there's a lot of money on the table still. I agree with what the other two said. Don't make any bold assumptions about how low prices might go, because at this stage of the game, you shouldn't take anything for granted, especially looking at what the market's done over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Let's wrap up our conversation, get a final word from each of you. I will start with John Zanker at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, we've touched a little bit on the 23 situation, and I agree 100% with the other two. We need to be careful in here, and it's been easier to make some 22 pricing decisions, 2021 crop, 22 marketing season. Now it's going to get difficult, and we need to be careful. And one of the things that I've always followed people have asked, when should we start selling some 23 crop? And if you're not up against that crop insurance wall for the 22, I wouldn't be selling any 23 at a big discount, especially when I have no idea what my input costs are. So especially if you're sitting on a nice crop right now and you're 40% sold, I'd be looking at taking that pricing up to 60-70% at least before I'd even think about selling any 23. And weather-wise, one thing stands out. If you go back to 2016 when we had the record soybean yield, we've had some real volatility in June and May of 2019, of course, with the flooding and everything. But one thing that's been pretty solid here since 2016 is we have a hard time finishing these great crops off. If we have a good crop sitting in the field, Iowa's seen this certainly in 20, we can have a great crop in the last week of July. And then all of a sudden by the last week of August, we're saying where to go. And it doesn't tend to rain as much in August as we would like. And so we're set up for some crazy finishes here to this crop. And we're starting to see the signs of that here in the extended forecast in the Western Corn Belt.
Logan Kimmel from Rotag Marketing in Naperville, Illinois. Your final word for the day.
Well, I think we've had another week of obviously extreme volatility and outside macros move our grain markets in wide ranges. And we've seen what's happened with money flow and funds being vacuumed out of the markets and outside markets. Until that stops, I still think things will remain very volatile. At the end of the day, this has been brought up, we still got to produce the crop this year here and next year too, in order to relieve our tight balance sheet. So still expect high volatility going forward. Look to make marketing decisions on 2022, but also keep in mind 2023 potential production. Again, I think it's going to remain volatile until we know what this 6 to 10 day and even a 2 week forecast looks like. That's what the market's going to trade, or these daily forecasts that continue to flip flop back and forth.
And to Matt Bennett from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois.
Yeah, I agree with what these guys are saying. Definitely want to watch the forecast. Also, it just seems to me like a lot of these forecasts for the month of August seem to be in agreement that we're looking at a warmer, drier pattern. And so with what John was saying, finishing the crop off could be a real challenge. It could be a real challenge. And, you know, the balance sheet on beans certainly doesn't have the ability to withstand, a 2 or 3 or 4 bushel drop in national yield. So, I think the corn market, obviously, or the corn crop is farther along in its development. If you're going to shut off the rain at the end of July, you could be looking at two completely different situations. But as a producer, you've just got to look and see your particular crop. What kind of money can you make at today's prices? Run the balance sheet, run the profitability analysis, figure out what do you need to be able to make things work and not worry about all the outside noise. Because if we try to figure these markets out, we're not going to do too good.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like online at willag.org, willag.org, or check us out in your favorite podcast application. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett, Logan Kimmel, and John Zanker.